Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will talk to Brian Windhorst about the NBA draft and also about the big trade between the Bucks and the Heat. And we'll talk about the World Cup with Chuck Culpepper. But first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
On the 18th fairway, he had already hit his second shot onto the green. His caddy went to the side of the ropes where the kid's father was. The kid's father put on the bib and carried the bag.
So it's
just
great.
A great honor.
Yeah.
It was just wonderful. Carried the bag all the way to 18. Although the kid didn't talk to him. Right, Michael? It seemed like the kid didn't talk
Gotta
to him.
Got to try to post a number.
You know, yeah.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And we are complete today. Michael is back.
The two rules of caddying.
Show up, shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Show up, shut up. Yeah, those are the rules.
Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah, that's it. You know.
It was a four-iron, Dad.
Yeah. So,
do you remember the one time you caddied for me?
I do. I wasn't very good at it.
You were not.
Big tip at the end?
Yeah.
No tip. No tip. Totally stiff the caddy. Big hitter, the llama.
Total conscience.
Yeah. So from Barry Snyder. Barry Snyder is the rum man.
Yes.
And we're very, he sends a note. Listening to the pod, it's always a thrill to hear Mr. Tony mention my name in Panama. It's Panama rum. I just have to advise, don't mix the rum with Coke. Try a sip neat first. Yes, it is sweet. Rums are sweet in general, but these rums at 15 to 20 years are meant to be enjoyed without a mixer. I'd say it's closer to an Irish whiskey in smoothness than, say, a Bacardi. Okay, I don't know what a Bacardi is.
That's another type of rum.
But that's a white rum, I think.
Yeah, it could be white, light, or
so
dark.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. Anyway, hope you enjoy it. Thanks so much for everything. P.S. In my head, I could hear what Arch would say, didn't try it, don't want to try it. No, I'm going to try it. So let's do the open here. Let me just explain. Wilbon is not on today. But Wilbon last night was yelling at me through text, how could I watch the Nats game when the NBA draft was on? Let me tell you what I believe about the NBA draft and the NFL draft and the NHL draft and the Major League Baseball draft. They all are essentially the same to me. They are static television shows. They get a lot of ratings. People like to watch them. They want to see who their team drafts. I get all that. But to me, it's really all it is somebody getting up to a microphone and calling out a name or a number. It's like bingo in a VFW hall to me. And Wilbon is always screaming on the television show, always screaming, just watch the games. Don't ask me who I think is going to win. That's why we watch the games. I watched a game last night. That's what I did. I watched one of the greatest, though heartbreaking, games I've ever seen. The Nats in Philadelphia, in Washington, D.C. The Nats are up at the beginning of the game, through the first and the middle innings, 5-0.
Yeah, get up to a 2-0
lead. Then it gets chipped away. It gets chipped away. And by the way, the two guys who I hate and don't think should be on the team, Tana and Vivas,
were
great last night. I give them credit. They were great last night. Then it gets to 5-2. Then it gets to 5-4. It's 5-4. The relief pitching isn't as sharp as you want it to be. And then
it's another one of those, they start with the opener and then they bring.
Yes.
You know,
yeah. Poulin, I think they started with Andy Poulin last night and they brought in Patel. And in any case, the Nats end up being down 6-5, right?
Yep.
6-5 going into the bottom of the seventh, bottom of the eighth. Bottom of the eighth. They're down 6-5. They get 3 runs. They're up 8-5. They only have to go. Lovelady hasn't been great, and Beater hasn't been great. They almost lost the game when James Wood, who is a fine power hitter, who last night waved at a couple of pitches and just struck out casually.
It was the seventh inning.
He's in.
Runner on third.
Yeah, he didn't get the runner in. Yep. It was a bad strikeout, and you see that a lot from him. I mean, you have to be fair in your criticism of people. You know, you just can't say he's the greatest player in the world.
As we're campaigning for the All-Star game.
Yeah, you know, he'll be in the All-Star lineup because he's got a lot of home runs. But he waved at a couple of pitches last night. Didn't help. Didn't score a run that you're supposed to score. And then he runs after ball in right field, and he dives, and it's in the webbing of his glove. And upon landing on the grass, it gets knocked out.
Yeah,
gets knocked out. So they go up. The Phillies go up 6-5.
And before that, he had a play on a ball that was in foul territory. Really tough play, but
tough
he was
play.
There.
He was there. Tough play. But, I mean, you know, there's a little bit too much just praising of his effort. You can't just, praising the effort is 70% of the play. The ball being loose is the other 30% of the play that results in something. In any case, it doesn't matter because the Nats go up 8-6 going into the top of the ninth. They have to get three outs. They can allow one run. They have to get three outs. They have Brad Lord on the mound. He's a guy I like. Starts the inning off with two strikeouts. One was a dropped strikeout and had to throw to first, and the other was a regular strikeout. So they now need one out.
Feeling pretty good at this point.
Oh, feeling Lord.
Pretty good. Trey Turner then gets a hit. Next guy hits a home run.
Ugh.
Now it's a tie game. Let me explain to you that with two out, Brad Lord got nobody else out. And then they brought in Schultz. He didn't get anybody out for a while either. The Phillies scored 8 runs in the top of the ninth with two out. With two out. A complete fail.
This is at the top of MLB.com, too.
Is that? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You will remember. So Wilbon will say, I don't care. I wouldn't even watch the Cubs because the draft is on. Well, Wilbon would have. He missed a great game. Do you remember the game in San Francisco where the Nats were up 9-1 and lost the game late? This is worse. This is no question this is worse. It's at home against a division rival.
Game 2 of a 4-game series.
This is worse.
Schwarber,
they had this game in the bag. They made a great comeback in the bottom of the 8th. They gave up 10 runs in the last 2 innings? What it is, right? 10 runs. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. And thrilling.
Math. Yeah.
And absolutely thrilling at the same time. So glad I watched it. Didn't watch any of the NBA draft. Because again,
it's one of those
with
games,
the number 3 pick, so what?
It's one of those games, 12 hours later, you're sort of, you know, it's crippling. You're sort of laughing at it.
Yeah.
It's so hard to believe.
I'm on the text chain. I'm the only one on. At one point, I write, am I the only one watching this game? Am I talking to myself?
Do you know where I was? So after the Phillies take the lead, we're downstairs. I leave the house. I just start walking the neighborhood. And then I'm following on game day as my light as I'm walking up and down the street. And they get the lead. They get the lead back. So I have to now stay outside until the game goes final.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just looking through the Phillies lineup.
It's the best everyday lineup in the league.
They score 14 runs. And one of the best, maybe the best power
Harper
hitter.
Harper had nothing.
And Schwarber didn't play.
Schwarber was on pace for 61 home runs. It's hurt. And Harper did nothing.
Now, put this in perspective. Since the first couple weeks, the Phillies have been the best team in baseball.
Yeah.
Well, since I got Don Mattingly.
Yeah.
But you can never expect to win this game.
Not at all.
It's an unlosable game for the Nats. Unlosable.
It also just reminds you, when the Nats took the lead, they were still down by total hits during the game. So they had, like, it was sort of a circumstance that they had the lead at all. But, man.
I'm in 3 different conversations. I'm in a conversation with Saliza and Chuck Todd. I'm in a conversation with the socialite separately, and I include Wilbon on a couple of things saying, "Why? How can you not watch this game? What are you watching this junk for?" And Tom Jones, not that Tom Jones. And I'm frantically typing. It's completely memorable to me. I'll forget it next week.
Yes, you're absolutely correct, but it's your point about the text chains. It's what's so powerful about sports. It brings people together. So one of our good friends, the boys' baseball coach, who's a Phillies fan, knows the exact right time to text me and say, you want to loop me in to the Nats thread just to get the perspective from the other dugout? He's going to the games today and tomorrow. And what's great is he's like, you think you're going to lose the next two? I'm convinced we're going to lose the next two.
So it was really, really good. And, you know, for the criticism I will take today on the air, on PTI, that I didn't watch the draft. The draft's the most important thing in the world. This is the same guy who hates the NFL draft. Drafts are drafts. Yes. You know, TV drafts are TV drafts. That's all they are. Again, it's a guy going B14.
Now serving.
That's what it is, you know, to me.
Essentially, yes.
Everybody knows it doesn't matter. There's nothing going on.
Yeah.
It's not a game. Nothing going on. One other thing. I was very surprised about this. The quarterback from Texas Tech.
Sorsby, yeah.
Brendan Sorsby, he's not going to the NFL. The NFL said, pound sand, pal. We're not taking you this year. And I didn't realize this. I thought the supplemental draft was an institutionalized thing that happened every year for a couple of people for whatever reasons. No. The NFL has had for years the priority of creating or not creating a supplemental draft. It's at their whim. It's not at your whim.
No, there.
It's at their whim. And they looked at this guy and they said, you know what? We don't want to touch this guy with a 10-foot pole this year. And they said, you're welcome to apply to the draft in 2027. So they're not banning him. But in effect, this year they are banning him. I don't think he can go back to college. I don't know how it works. Do we have anybody who knows how it works? I don't think Texas Tech has taken him back now. I think Texas Tech panicked when the rest of the Big 12 said, what are you doing? And I think the kid relinquished his right because he was going to the supplemental draft. Advice by lawyers or advice by football people, I don't know. But I'm sure he thought they would have this draft for him, and he relinquished his right to play for Texas Tech this year and accepted, apparently, maybe not, it seemed to me accepted the ban from the NCAA. I guess he could play in the NAIA. I guess he could go play at a community college.
Binghamton?
I guess he could do that. Well, Binghamton, we don't have a team. We'd create a team for him.
Sure.
You know, but I think what the NFL said, really? No, not so fast, my friend.
No.
You have a problem, and we are not taking you in this year. That's what it seems to me happened. But I was sort of stunned by it.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't expect it.
Like you, I thought the supplemental draft happened all the time.
Yeah.
I just didn't see it every year. So I was like, oh, that was interesting. And the tone of the note from the NFL was not like, hey, we know you've got a problem. We want you to work through it. It was like, yeah, figure it out and then come back to us maybe next year.
The tone of the NFL was, you haven't done enough for us.
Yeah.
You know, we don't see contrition. We don't know what your plan is. You know, you just can't. The NFL said, you just can't waltz in here like it's your league. It's our league, pal. Yeah. That's what the tone was with that. So I was surprised at that. I think that's everything, right? I mean, am I supposed to talk? We have Brian Windhorst, so I don't have to talk about getting the Bansa.
No.
You know, I think I always thought the Bansa would be the one pick. Wilbon thought he'd be the one pick.
The kid from BYU, was that?
Yeah, Wilbon knows his dad. Wilbon now is measuring everything on knowing dads. Wilbon knows Caleb Williams' dad. Wilbon knows James Wood's dad. But if I said to Wilbon, he has to catch that ball. Well, no. His dad's great.
He made a great effort.
He did. He made a great
effort.
There. He made a great effort, but it didn't come to the fruition that we hoped for.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, look, Dylan Cruz is hitting the ball lately, but he didn't look like a major league hitter until a couple of weeks ago. And last night I made a comment to the Socialite. I wrote him, I said, he's making contact all the time. Strikes out the very next time he's up, he strikes out. So I don't, you know, you just can't predict. You can't. You have to look at the player in toto, as we say. So we will take a break, and Brian Windhorst, as I said, as I advertised, will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Aubrey Dale, who writes, hope you're having a great summer. I wanted to reach out, let you know my album is finally out in the world. Yay. And she sent us a couple of songs. This is called Should Have Been Mine. Said she'd be honored to be played on this show. The honor is ours.
Oh, yeah.
The honor is ours. You know, she's just got a beautiful voice. And you can listen to her at the end of the show. You don't have to listen to me. Just listen to her. Aubrey Dale and Should Have Been Mine. And she plays in Brian Windhorst. And this segment with Brian Windhorst is brought to you by FanDuel. Play your game. I'm not going to start with the draft because, like, the greater news, I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen with these players, you know, for a while yet. But the trading of Giannis Antetokounmpo, I mean, that's a big deal. There's three teams involved in this. There's one shadow team, Boston, that didn't get him. There's Miami and there's Milwaukee. Who do you think wins this? Who wins this trade?
Well, the best player, the best, you know, the elite talent involved is Giannis, and when the smoke cleared, he's on the Heat.
Yep.
So, you know, you have to say that the Heat won. you know, and the Bucks, the determining factor in this trade for the Bucks is going to be what happens with the two guys they took last night. You know, that's the basis for what the Bucks' future is these two lottery picks that they had. And they went with Braden Burries, who's a shooter out of Arizona, highly regarded, and Nate Ament, who is a prospect. My God, Tony, he's so young. He, you know, sometimes you see these guys who are 18, they look like they're 24. This guy's 19, looks like he's 16.
Yeah.
You know, he has not met a razor yet. And, you know, in 4 years, this guy could be an absolute beast. or he could be in Europe. I don't know. You know, I don't know. But in 3 or 4 years, people might be looking, because, you know, Giannis was picked 15th. You know, Tony, Giannis was not even in the green room. He was in the stands. All right. They were like, you know, nobody knew how to pronounce his name.
Right.
You know, nobody said, you know, the next day you weren't talking about him. You know, he kind of looked like this kid, Ament. I don't know. For all I know, they got this, another Giannis last night. I don't know. But, you know, I can't answer on that question. I can't answer that Giannis is still in his prime. He still has a lot left. He definitely has an injury concern. There's no doubt about it. But he's got a lot left when he's out on the court, and he's now on the Heat. Now, the problem is that the Heat's team is, you know, incomplete, and the Eastern Conference has some really good teams in it, some really, really good teams in it. And so, you know, when LeBron came to Miami, the Heat were the instantaneous favorites. Like, you know, they weren't a finished product, but, you know, everybody thought they would win, and they made the finals and lost in six. I don't think this Heat team is ready to do that. So it's not like 2019, but it's a big acquisition, obviously.
Why do you think that Giannis was traded to Miami and not Boston? Because if he's traded to Boston, you can actually say Boston's going to win the championship this year.
Yeah, you could make that argument. I think it would be, you know, there's some things they'd have to do, but your point is not wrong. So there's a reason why this took some time and why Milwaukee hedged on it. You can imagine the discussion that must have gone on amongst their ownership and their general manager, because obviously Jaylen Brown is a premium player. He's 29 years old. He just made second team all NBA. He just finished sixth in the MVP voting. He's under contract for 3 more years. So it's not like he can like say, I'm not reporting, so, you know, forget you. You know, the team has the leverage. He has this desire to go dominate somewhere else, to prove the world wrong, that he can win on his own. It's very attractive. But, you know, here's what I think the answer was. I think Milwaukee didn't believe that they would have a complete team. This trade was essentially Giannis for Jaylen and a couple of first-round picks. And that sounds good, but one of them was pick number 27 last night. You're not drafting a guy there who's going to be his running mate, you know, for the next 3 years. You're drafting a prospect that may be able to be in the rotation in 2 years. And so I think Milwaukee was like, well, the reason we're in this pickle is we've got nothing left around Giannis. And they may have been in the exact same situation a year from now. They'd have Jaylen Brown. Yeah, he'd be an all-NBA player. And they'd be back at the lottery with nothing to build around him, and he'd want out. And so I think they took the trade that refilled their organization, and they just bet on that they would be able to draft two star players last night. And maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But that's where their rubber's going to meet the road on this deal for Milwaukee.
There's another trade.
Those 2 picks they made last night.
Yeah, there was another trade yesterday that has less attention, although I like it more because that was Julius Randle just being swept off the side of the yacht into the water. Float your way to Brooklyn, pal, for nothing. What do you make of that?
Cash dump. So there's a few things. First off, Minnesota, you know, I think the team feels okay about this because Randle was terrible in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Okay. And the way his game plays and what he needs to do, he kind of needs the ball. You know, he's not a finisher. He kind of needs the ball, and, you know, he's an inconsistent shooter. He has moments where he's awesome, but he needs a lot of oil. He needs a lot of attention. And they move him off, and it actually aligns their roster a little bit better. It enables some guys to have bigger roles. Naz Reid to be the starter. He's a really good player. One of the revelations of the playoffs, Tony, was Jaden McDaniels, who, you know, was running his mouth and then backed it up with some great games. It actually opens up a role for, you know, a bigger role for him. Like, that's all well and good. But they traded him for nothing.
Nothing. 33rd
and
pick. Nothing.
You do that. Basically, what does it say to your superstar, Ant Edwards? And I'm sure Ant is, you know, excited about Jaden's role and excited about Nas, but they needed to do something else to help their team. And now they do have this, when you trade a player for nothing into someone else's cap room, you get basically a gift certificate, at $30 million for them that they can go use on another player. And maybe they will. Maybe they'll use it on another player, and I'll be like, oh, okay, that really makes sense. But I don't think they are. I think their owners are tired of paying the luxury tax. They've paid over $100 million in the last 3 years combined, and I think they're done with it. And I think that they're going to suffer at some point because of it, and we'll see how Ant feels after that.
Okay. Dusty May going to Dallas.
Yeah.
Did anybody see this coming? Anybody?
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously none of us were talking about it on television, but it was out there in our world. Actually, when I first heard about this, Tony, was, you know, 6 months ago. I heard that Dusty May, if Steve Kerr had retired, which, you know, for a while it looked like that might happen.
That's right.
But believe it or not, Dusty May was near the top of the list for the Warriors. He's really, you know, he sent a lot of guys to the NBA over the last couple of years. And as these executives have watched these teams play, they really like how his demeanor and the way he coaches and the way he puts teams together. And so his name really gained traction. I think he was on the list in Orlando.
Wow.
And Dallas really wanted their ownership really wanted a championship coach. You know, when they fired Jason Kidd, basically, if you had a ring, you got a call. Unfortunately, Floyd, you know, you're not getting Eric Spoelstra. You know,
yeah.
You know, Nick Nurse coaches the 76ers. Ty Lue coaches the Clippers. And so he hired a GM in Masai Ujiri, who is a championship GM, and then he hired a coach who has a championship. The fascinating thing, Tony, is that they drafted one of his players last night.
Yes. Didn't you think they were going to do that to take his first pick would be one of his players?
Yes. But let me just say this. Morez Johnson. So three Michigan guys went in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. People thought this guy would go third amongst them.
And he went one.
He goes one. And the amazing thing that you just would never see, Dusty May is sitting there. They had this sort of area where all the coaches sat, and so that the coaches could embrace the players. Calipari seemed to get a better seat than Dusty May, if you can believe it or not. Calipari was at the main table. Dusty May, they didn't have room for him. They had him on the side. But here he is. He drafts his player, and your old coach and your new coach is embracing you in the same moment. It was a unique situation. The fascinating thing is people, you know, they're all big guys. You know, there's power forwards and centers, and they take this guy. And I was talking to Yaxel Lennenborg, who ended up going third amongst them. And I think he was stunned that the guy went first. So you wonder, like, how much of an influence, because, you know, they only hired him 3 days ago. How much of an influence did he have? And did they say to him, well, who's your favorite amongst these? And he's like, I like this guy. So you talk about having unique insight into players, you know, being able to have that kind of information with the coach is fascinating.
So we talk about Brooklyn being the land of the dead, being in exile at this point, and how terrible it is for Julius Randle to end up there. What about Boozer going to Memphis? Memphis is a truck stop in the NBA. Memphis is the one place that every single year people say, let's get out of Memphis. What do you make of this? Is that good or bad for Boozer?
I think it's going to be good for him because they can structure the team around him. You know, if you gave him truth serum, you know, would he have preferred to go to Chicago where his father played for a while and had success? And, you know, you're in a major, I mean, somebody's going to be the star of the Chicago Bulls.
Yes.
And, you know, and actually Caleb Wilson, you know, the Bulls ended up, I think, in a great spot last night, getting this incredibly talented kid out of North Carolina, Caleb Wilson, with the fourth pick. If you're asking him in a blind test, would you rather be a star in a totally rebuilding team in Chicago or a star in a totally rebuilding team in Memphis? I think, in all fairness, you take Chicago. But Memphis has shown an ability to build good teams. They're not an ability to finish. They've had disappointing finishes. But yeah, it's, you know, they were in love with him. Honestly, I think if Memphis might have seriously considered taking him at number two, that's how much Memphis wanted him. And, yeah, I mean, a strange thing happened last night, Tony, that I still, the next morning, don't even understand regarding Memphis. So I was doing this show that runs on YouTube. That's on the internet. I don't know if you've ever heard of
it. I've heard of the internet. Yeah. I don't go on it. Yeah.
Yeah. We have this show that runs on the at ESPN that runs on YouTube called Hoop Streams. And so we were doing our own draft broadcast, and we were getting these guys who were being drafted. And this kid from Mexico, it made history, Kareem Lopez, first Mexican-born kid ever to get drafted in the first round. And he's had a fascinating history. Moved to Spain when he was 14 and moved to New Zealand when he was 17. And so anyway, he gets drafted by the Detroit Pistons, but is very quickly traded to the Grizzlies. Okay. So he goes up to the podium and he hugs and shakes Adam Silver's hand. And this is, you know, everyone's talking about, you know, Mexico, a moment for Mexican basketball, et cetera. He goes and takes his photos or whatever. And he comes over to us, and it's been about 15 minutes since he's been drafted. And he's wearing the Pistons hat because you know how it is.
You got to wear the hat. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm talking to him, and this is live on YouTube. You know, there's tens of thousands of people watching. It's not the ABC broadcast. There's not a million, but there's tens of thousands of people. And I mentioned Memphis to him, and he kind of looks at me sideways, and he answers the question and keeps going. His English is excellent. And I come back to Memphis again, and he like looks at me and says something like, "Why you say Memphis?" And I was like, "The Grizzlies drafted you." And he's like, "What?" I go, "Yeah, you got traded. You're a Grizzly." And he looks at me, and now I screwed up, Tony, because, you know, I'm doing this during the draft, and I screw up that the Grizzlies have this kid's rights.
Yeah.
And the producer comes in my ear and says, "Yes, he's been traded." He verifies, and he's wired up. He's got he's got a headset on, and he hears the producer say he's a Grizzly, and he's sort of shocked. And he takes the Pistons hat and turns it around.
Yeah, somebody get him a new hat.
And I honestly think I broke the news to this poor kid that he was going to Memphis. He thought he was going to Detroit for 15 minutes.
They have to trade John Morant, don't they? They have to get rid of him, don't they? Does anyone want him?
So I would love to be able to 100% say that I think he'll never show up in a Grizzlies jersey again. I think that's likely, but it's the NBA. There's reconciliations.
Yeah.
You know, things change. You know, I think we've seen the last of him in Memphis, yes.
So I've got to do the show today, and Wilbon's going to insist that all we do, even though you're going to be the guest, Wilbon's going to insist that we go wall to wall with the draft because it's the most important thing in the history.
The second round?
No, he wants to go back to the first round and then do picks for the second round on the Wilbon rookie index chart and all of that, but at least he'll just sort of wallow in Caleb Wilson, right? I mean, that's what he'll be able to do. Is there a headline to you from the draft? Is there a headline?
Well, the headline is that the Wizards chose DeBanza, and it's a big, giant, huge decision that could potentially define the franchise for the next 10 to 15 years. Is that enough to? I talked, you know, the draft is not my profession, but, you know, I obviously spent the last week preparing for it. And I talked to like super experienced scouts that I trust and know and have great track records. And one guy will make a compelling case for DeBanza. And then you'll turn to the guy sitting next to him who's got the same resume. And the guy will make a compelling case for Peterson.
Yes. And Jay Billis on our show yesterday said that Carlos Boozer is the best basketball player and Caleb Wilson has the most upside. So how do you know, right? How do you know?
Yeah, I think this went the way that I would have gone if I was doing it. I think DeBanza is a little bit safer, but a little bit less upside potentially. And Peterson could end up being an MVP, Tony. But they're on the pie chart of possibilities that could happen. I think there's a Ben Simmons slice on there
for him.
And so
for Peterson,
yeah.
Billis said of Peterson, he could lead the league in scoring immediately. He cannot be stopped. He's that good.
Yeah. So that's a bigger piece of the pie chart.
Yeah.
And I think as the Wizards were looking at it, they were like, I think they went with the mildly safe, like DeBanza could be a 6 or 8 or 12 time All-Star. Like he could be an All-Star every year. Peterson could win an MVP award.
Yeah.
But Peterson also just has some aspects of his personality that are just a little bit concerning. Not, you know, not like, oh man, this is a roll of the dice. And he sort of fits where the Wizards are. He's going to play with Trae Young and Anthony Davis. I think the Bans will average 20 points his rookie year. I think he'll come in and be great. But I agree with Jay. I think Peterson, you know, like Derrick Rose won MVP his third year. Peterson could, it's on the board. And I'm not saying he's going to do that. It's on the board as a possibility. But he also, you know, it's not a, his profile is a little bit different from other players. So, yeah, the headline to me is the Wizards went in with DeBansa, and now we will see whether that choice was a gold mine or they got a silver mine.
Yeah.
I mean, gold mine went too. We'll see.
Well, their history indicates that they do it wrong, but, you know, they took the last two times they had it, they took Kwame Brown, who was a failure. I haven't played in the league for a long time, but was a failure as a number one pick, and they took John Wall, who flamed out early and then ended up being paid to stay away.
John Wall is referred to as a Wizards legend.
By who?
Don't you know that?
By who?
By the Wizards. By the Wizards.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know what they're doing. Yeah, all right. I'll see you later on TV. Thanks.
Okay, have a great day.
Brian Windhorst, boys and girls. Love him. This segment with Brian Windhorst has been brought to you by FanDuel. Play your game, and we will come back with Chuck Culpepper. Good show today. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
I've been burned by a dead end road. Once again, this is Aubrey Dale, who's just fabulous.
Better than me, better than you.
Oh, yeah, sure. Just fabulous. This is called Fireweed. Michael, if terrific singers, independent music artists like Aubrey Dale want to send in their music for us to play, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And she plays in Chuck Culpepper. And, you know, most of the time I have 15, 18 questions prepared and I get to 4 or 5 or 6. I don't really have any questions prepared because Chuck is all over the world all the time and has a new gig, and apparently they're letting him write. Which, you see, if you're going to hire Chuck Culpepper, let him write. That's how it works. Where have you been? What are you doing in general?
I have been a lot in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, a little bit Connecticut, hanging out with the diaspora of Cabo Verde or Cape Verde, the island country 400 miles off the coast of West Africa that has been the darling of the entire World Cup, and to be around the fans and the people who welcomed the team to the country back in early June with a whole series of events that I went to has been one of the, I don't know how to rank experiences anymore, but it's been one of the best ones I can ever recall. And now, of course, their team has drawn with both Spain and Uruguay and has a chance to make it through to the knockout round, which for the third smallest country in population and second smallest in size ever to qualify for the World Cup is just really, really something. I wish I had been in Cabo Verde itself, because that must be really something.
So this is an odd thing. The other day we had a story set to go about soccer, and it got bumped out because Messi scored 2 more goals, so we had to concentrate on Messi. That became the lead story. But I was prepared to talk a little bit about Cape Verde because I was fascinated by it. At first, Matt Kelleher said to me, it's only 2.5 square miles. I said, no, it can't be. 2.5 square miles doesn't make any sense. It's got to be bigger than that. I said, what's the population? He said, it's like 500,000. And what I was going to talk about is Baltimore has more people than Cape Verde. Do you see Baltimore in the World Cup? Because I don't. I don't. This is the achievement of Curacao, the achievement of Iceland, the achievement of Cape Verde, even with an expanded field, although I think Iceland got in when it was 32 and not 48. This is extraordinary beyond words, right? I mean, it's beyond words. And they've tied, and I know this because Kelleher told it to me, in the history of the World Cup, there have only been 8 countries that won it. Uruguay and Spain are 2 of them. And Cape Verde just tied both of them. How can this be?
I don't know if there's any way to explain it at all. And I think that's one of the best possibilities that happen with sports, is there are these things that come along that can't be explained, I think. You know, they have a league there in the country. They have more people living outside the country than they do, more citizens living outside the country than they do people living in the country. And that's because, historically, it just doesn't rain enough, and people have had to leave. And those who have left tell these stories about, say, for example, as they were kids, day-long ventures to do the laundry, involving 2-hour walks to, you know, to find a place that has water, and then drying the clothes on the rocks, and then coming back. And that story, just as an example, sort of tells us the hardship at times through history of living there, and the people who sort of hail from there, whose parents or grandparents come from there, have great fondness for the land and for the country, but often, you know, go away to, say, the Netherlands or the U.S., New England, mostly.
I'm having this conversation in PTI, and, you know, before we go down to the set, and Wilbon says, everybody from Cape Verde comes to America, they all settle in Boston. I go, what? And he says, no, it's true. And Chuck, you're going to tell me it's true, right? Well, they're all in Boston. Why?
I was, about 10 years ago, I was having a conversation with someone from there whose family had settled in Boston. And I never thought to ask sort of what, you know, it didn't seem to make sense to me. But again, here's something that I learned doing the story, which is that it all has its origins, say, in the 19th century, in the whaling industry.
Okay.
And out on the seas, the whaling ships from New England, especially New Bedford, Massachusetts, started bringing people from Cape Verde to the U.S., and there's a whaling museum, fantastic place in New Bedford. And, of course, the last whaling ship left and came back around 1925, so we don't do that anymore. It's still a major fishing port. But, you know, it caused and led to, when I was there a few weeks ago, they had a fashion show to welcome the team, a friendly match with Bermuda in Hartford. They had a full stadium welcoming the team with just a ceremony that was in Pawtucket. And it's all up there. And it's quite a story of how it got there.
Do they have a national stadium in Cape Verde is how it's pronounced? Do they have a national stadium there? You said they have a league there. Do they have, like, a big stadium?
They do. They do. And, you know, they qualified last October, and they won their group. They won their qualifying group. Cameroon, which has a great soccer history, you know, quarterfinals in the 1990 World Cup in Italy. Cameroon finished 2nd in that group behind this tiny country. And they do have a stadium there and in the capital, Praia, and others too. I will say that all their players, the 26 players here, play in leagues mostly across Europe. You know, a lot of them in Portugal and some in places like Finland or Cyprus or the UAE. two players in MLS. So
really,
all 26 players, well, 12 of them were born in the country, and six in the Netherlands because they have a huge.
Well, this is not surprising. Well. Half the people on the United States team don't speak English. You know, they're not from here. They didn't trace their ancestry. That's fine. What language do they speak in Cape Verde?
Okay, so it's Portuguese as the official language.
Oh, okay.
There is a Cabo Verdean Creole that they speak, sort of. That's the one in the day-to-day, you know, gets things done. And there are 10 islands, 9 of them inhabited, and one is supposedly, you know, stunningly beautiful with amazing turtles, but is uninhabited. And so, yeah, so they...
That's
they
prison. This, that's where they send you if you commit a crime. You go to that island with the turtles. It's uninhabitable. Yeah. It's like having the 19th hole at Rehoboth, and they take a whole lot of play all the time, and then you go play 19. It's like, this is like, they have one more game, right? They got one more game.
They do with Saudi Arabia.
If they win that, not even if they win, if they tie that and they're 0-0-3, are they moving on?
Let me think. They are on 2 points. They could. A lot of it depends on the Spain-Uruguay match that's coming up too as well.
Right.
So they have quite a chance to move on, which is just, even in an expanded field, is just, it defies description or belief.
Are you a soccer fan? Because I mean,
yes.
I'm not. Oh, you are. Did you play as a kid? Like, are you not a soccer poet though? You're not gonna tell me how stupid I am because I don't appreciate the beautiful game. You're not gonna do that, are you?
No, I don't believe in being one of those. Yeah, but good. No,
it's a Subaru driving lot of people. I don't like them. Go ahead.
I didn't know that much about it, but I moved to the UK in 2006, and then I started learning things such as that when a match is listed, the home side is listed first. You know how we say, I don't know, what do we say, like Buffalo at New England?
Yeah, the home side's always second with us, always.
Second.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was about to go, you know, to the wrong town when I started off there. And then I steadily kind of learned, you know, things about it and some of the language. I feel I don't follow it as well as I should because, for example, if you follow college football and then try to watch the English Premier League on the same Saturday, you tend to be up from, you know, 6 a.m. to 4 in the morning or something like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't do as well as I'd like, but I really love it.
Will you move on if they don't? Yeah, what's the next assignment? Are you going to be with the World Cup the whole way through?
I'm not quite clear on that, actually.
Okay.
I don't know for sure. Yeah.
I remember, I will watch the final game, I'm sure, and I'll complain about it, and I'll watch it by myself and make jokes about why I don't like it. But it is, you know, they're in fabulous condition, and they're great athletes. I mean, soccer's one of the few sports where you can be of average size and succeed, right? Isn't that one of the attractions of soccer? You don't have to be 6'10".
Right, that's right. And look at no further than Messi.
Yeah, he's small.
He's a great example of that, yes.
Is he, you know, it's sort of automatic when you watch TV. People say, oh, he's the GOAT. And I'm old enough to remember Pelé. He's not the GOAT, or is he the GOAT?
I think like you do about this. I think there's so much push to have a GOAT and to have it be current.
Yeah.
But I do think what's happening in this World Cup is going to cement for a lot of people the idea that he's the GOAT because not only that he's scored, what is it, five goals
in two games. Yeah.
But how they've looked.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea of how they've looked is just... I believe today is his birthday as well. So
39. It's pretty old.
Right.
It's not as old as Ronaldo in Portugal, but it's pretty old.
Right.
In soccer.
Right. But I'm with you. I don't like to overlook Pelé or Maradona.
Here's my feeling about Messi. We in America are inclined towards him now because of his experience by going to the MLS, because of being in Miami, because of the pink shirts, because of all of that, because of his accessibility and his greatness. I mean, usually these people come here when they're done and, you know, maybe they get a goal once in a while, but he's the best player in that league and he's the best player ever in the United States, right? He's the best.
Yes, that's right. And when we behold something like that, I think it's fair to say that as a people, we're like loud.
Yeah.
So when we behold something like that, it gets loud. Mm-hmm. So, and even though I wouldn't say that as he's played there in Miami, I don't know, it doesn't permeate the sports culture. I don't think people who don't have a love for soccer follow him match to match. But there's something about the presence that, you know, that makes him more accessible to us now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the person you're looking at. I mean, I don't particularly care about soccer one way or the other, but I'm aware of him and I see the electricity in what he does and I see the way he is responded to by teammates and by other people in the soccer world. And I think, you know what? Now, my essence of an answer is, I don't know much about this, but something special about him. Doesn't he sort of transmit that?
Yes, yes. And, you know, you think of there's a beautiful writer, Rory Smith, who, you know, has written for the New York Times at time. And he wrote this, he went to Kansas City to Messi's first match during this World Cup. And he wrote this, again, beautiful thing about, and he has watched it all his life, unlike someone like myself, or, you know, who kind of tried to learn at age 40, whatever. So he you know, when I listened to him, and I know him a little bit, and I listened to him, and he wrote this column in The Observer in London about that match and about what it's like to watch Messi, and it really sort of solidified or bolstered for me that people who know the sport in their bones also feel something watching Messi that they don't feel watching anybody else.
He got 88,000 people to Jordan-Hare Stadium at Auburn. They put the war eagle out there for him. Right. You know, that stuff, that does not happen, right?
That's right. That's the detail that tells all, right?
Yeah.
The sort of the eccentric detail that tells the central tale. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like most people that care about SEC football would say of soccer, wait, you're not using your hands? What? Huh? What? Anyway. All right, Chuck, thanks. It's always nice to talk with you, even if we have nothing. It's just nice to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tony. Thank
Chuck Culpepper, boys and girls. We will take a break. We'll have email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Bill Pitcher, if I have this correct, Quarryville, Pennsylvania? It sticks in my mind.
I will have to check on that.
I don't know, but that's wonderful.
We
love
that.
Just wonderful. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled. I want to give a quick shout out to our friend Greg Garcia. You can go see him perform.
At the Draft House?
Yeah, the Arlington Cinema Draft House this Friday and Saturday. There's 4 shows, 2 a night. He's opening up for Nick Thune, so head on by.
Nick Thune is a guy who goes on the road with Nate, right?
Yes. With Bargatze? I believe so, yes.
That's what I think. Okay, by the way, we have bagels today in honor of Michael's return. I'm happy about that. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say...
Michael's gone for 3 days.
Yeah, life goes on day after day. Hearts torn in every way. So ferry across the Mersey, because this land's the place I love, and here I'll stay. That's Jerry and the Pacemakers. It's a beautiful song, really is. Thanks to our guests today, Brian Windhorst and Chuck Culpepper. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. Get the show through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review. From Chris in Arlington, Virginia. Dear Tony, please tell Mr. Sam, not Samuel Neill, to eat it. Sincerely, his opposing counsel, who was haunted by his name popping up on the stinking podcast during a Monday flight to sit in a windowless conference room with Sam Neill. Wait, Could it be that Sam Neill? Connective tissue is one thing, and blessings be unto David Aldridge and his moments. But I never expected to settle in before a deposition by asking another lawyer. This is random, maybe too personal. Did you happen to play golf in a father-son tournament this past weekend? Were you really nice to the group ahead of you? His immediate laugh and then a simple question, Kornheiser, gave me my answer. It sparked a great conversation about this podcast, PTI and family. Well, a great conversation for two of us. Everyone else in the room, not so much. Lovely.
Did you ask about his devastating curveball from Little League?
Struck out like 16 guys.
Oof. He was working arm angle early.
From Brian Rigsby in Elon, North Carolina. I'm in Omaha for the College World Series. I was looking for something to do when I thought of a piece that Ryan McGee did about a small store with College World Series memorabilia. When I go inside, who was there but Ryan McGee?
How about that?
I was able to buy a copy of his book, Road to Omaha, and get him to sign it. As he was signing it, I told him I had one thing to say to him, La Cheeserie. He laughed and said that was the last thing he expected to hear on a street in Omaha. I can now mark off the David Aldridge moment on my Tony Bingo card. Isn't that wonderful?
That's great.
From Mark Hughes in Ashton, Maryland. Dear Skipper, I see that the Delaware Amateur Golf Tournament is being played on your home track at Rehoboth Beach Country Club. Looking at the first round scores, I see six scores of 90 or higher, including one of 99. Assuming these are 120 of the finest golfers in Delaware and knowing you never shoot higher than 99, does this mean you are one of the 120 best golfers in Delaware? I know it's a small state, but it would still seem to be pretty good. P.S. Do you belong to any other courses holding state amateur championships this year besides Columbia and RBCC? I didn't know Rehoboth was holding that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the leaderboard
Who's
right now.
Who's in it? Is Jay in it?
I'm not going that far down.
Well, Jay should be near the top. Right?
Well, I don't Jay see Whitby? His name right now.
He's been the Delaware champion before, Jay Whitby. He's really good player.
T29 through the two rounds.
Oh, so he's in it?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's lovely. Carla Corrado, Columbus, Ohio. Because I am an usher for Ohio State football games at the Shoe, I get notice for opportunities around Columbus to work other events like concerts and theater productions. I was thrilled to learn the U.S. Senior Open at Scioto. Is that how it's pronounced? Scioto Country Club?
Yeah.
That's Nicklaus's original course where he grew up playing. Was looking for volunteers. While we get paid to work all the other gigs, I figured it'd be fun to help keep spectators behind the ropes and yell La Cheeserie at Sanzi, even without the cash incentive. Alas, read the fine print. We volunteers are required to pay $150 a day to park cars, direct patrons to the restroom, and work the concession. We do get a free t-shirt. I believe this is the inverse of the heated toilet seat, two-bathroom experience. Yours cheaply, Carla Corrado. From Ken Scudder in Tacoma Park. You're not a rum person, so safe to assume you don't like pina coladas. How do you feel about getting caught in the rain? Are you into yoga? Do you have half a brain? I'll refrain from asking about your feelings regarding sexual congress behind sand dunes. So this is, what's his name? Oh,
Pina Colada song, yeah. Oh God, I can't remember who sings it.
Whatever, it's him. That's a funny
Rupert
song.
Rupert Holmes.
Rupert Holmes, that's right. It's his one big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Norm Chaffetz, Austin, Texas. So you're not a rum guy? Guess that makes you a rum-dum. That's funny. From Neil Ayervais, watching the ceremonies opening the Obama Presidential Center from afar, I was awed by the eloquence, passion, and intelligence of the presenters and the program, all of which was amplified and humanized by Michael Wilbon's wonderful impressions of that day. To hear Wilbon, who is rarely impressed and never surprised, be so humble, resonated in a uniquely emotional manner. How he described the speeches and the overall atmosphere with such heartfelt reverence and grace was exceptionally moving. Do please express our gratitude for such a beautiful shared memory. And thanks to you two for sharing your friendship and providing the littles these and so many other memorable conversations. Yeah, like this one. You're not watching the draft? No, not. Ron Grudzetski has a very nice small library. What's he talking about? Greenwood, Delaware. That's the first little town go through on the trip from
the
here to Delaware.
Yeah.
It's the first one. It's not Ellendale. It's Greenwood. They also have... They have an Italian restaurant there.
Yes.
You know, the name of which I will remember when I get off the air. And that's you pass Vanderwens when you begin to slow up to go into the town, to go into Greenwood. They have a lovely library.
Is the restaurant called Villa Piano's?
No, it's not Villa Piano's.
Cafe Tamborelli's?
Tamborelli's, yeah. Greenwood, Delaware has a very nice small library just off Route 16 by the railroad tracks. Yeah, I leave my hardbound and paper books there after they've been read. Isn't that nice? And Ron Grudzetski is from Lewis and Gaithersburg. Don Ames in Kingston, Ontario, in Canada. I would like to make the new game ideal requirements for the Kornheiser tier of the Capital Weather Gang's new venture. So I'll start. Wind speed checks for the Bay Bridge 24/7 measured in the Wilbon Speed Index, which I assume is about 250 miles an hour. Heat index notifications for hot bagel days, a representative button on the app From media Chevy Chase and Rehoboth weather updates, this place stinks, smog alerts. And one more, I also had a jean jacket. My opinion, chicks always look better than men in them, DJ. If you're out on your bike tonight, do wear white.
What does Argo mean?
I don't know.
You don't know?
It means Argo f*** yourself.
Side. far as they could go. I'm learning that letting go set me free. Now I'm coming back up like fire weed.